Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk about two somewhat competing philosophies for housing the homeless. One that's taken precedence, I think, in public policy is called Housing First, the idea that you worry less about supportive services initially, just get someone who doesn't have a place to live into housing. And then once that person has the stability of a place to live, then you can start to get services oriented to the individual. The other is a view that you really need to bring the services at the same time, and that the individual who's unhoused needs to commit that they're either going to get off drugs or have mental health counseling, that they're going to be things that they're going to commit to do as a part of getting a place provided to live. We're going to talk about those competing philosophies and hear the pros and cons of each of them. That's next hour, Air Talk, here on 89.3 KPCC. But we begin with last night's State of the Union, this afternoon's Senate impeachment vote on removing President Trump from office, and of course the Iowa caucus results as well. Joining us to talk about the very latest developments is Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent with NPR News. Ron, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Larry.
So let's start, first of all, with this afternoon's scheduled vote on removing President Trump from office. Obviously, Democrats are not going to get the two-thirds necessary to remove him in the Senate. But does it appear at this point it's going to be a straight party line vote?
We are still waiting for the final word. And, of course, we won't know until they actually cast those votes on the Senate floor in a few hours. But it does appear it's going to be very near a party line vote. We have no Republicans who are defecting. And one Democrat a lot of people had looked at as a potential vote to acquit the president was Doug Jones of Alabama, who just won his seat in a special election. It was quite a shock. Alabama hasn't been electing Democrats to statewide office for a very long time. And so when Doug Jones won that special to replace Jeff Sessions, who had become the president's first attorney general, that was a shock. And anyway, he's running for re-election in November because he has to. He can't just stay in that particular term office for longer than just the fraction of a full term. So he has to get re-elected in this November election, and Jeff Sessions is coming back. He wants the seat back. A lot of other Republicans do. A lot of people thought Doug Jones might feel he needed the cover of voting to acquit the president. He announced this morning he had studied everything he could and determined the president needed to be removed from office.
All right. This all, of course, against the backdrop of yesterday's release of the Gallup poll that shows President Trump's approval rating at 49%. Once you factor in a margin of error, it's really a down-the-middle split pretty much in this country as to approval and disapproval of President Trump. Amazingly, Republican support is now like 94% or something for the president. It's astounding. And the approval rating of the Republican Party, according to the Gallup poll, is the highest it's been since 2005. Now, are Democrats, Ron, thinking that perhaps impeachment has backfired?
Democrats always knew that impeachment was probably not going to be popular. It was highly unpopular when it happened to Bill Clinton. It pushed him up over 70% approval, and it made the Democratic Party more popular than it had been in many years when that happened in reverse 21 years ago. That is to say, it was reversed because the Republicans were impeaching and the president was a Democrat. So it's always been a very heavy lift, and that's why Nancy Pelosi refused to start it after the Mueller report came out and outlined a number of instances of what appeared to be obstruction of justice, which would be an impeachable offense. He said he couldn't indict a sitting president, that there was another mechanism. Hint, hint, he was talking about impeachment. And he did not have the authority to impeach the president. He just said, these are things, this is a roadmap, this is where you could go if you were the House of Representatives and you wanted to impeach him. Well, the House backed off on that last summer because they thought probably the country wouldn't be with them. Probably this would not be the best way to end this particular presidency, that they didn't want to give him the boost he might well get from an acquittal if they tried to impeach him on those Mueller charges. So they came back, though, after the whistleblower in August. That changed everything. And they felt at that point they absolutely had to respond because the president was doing things that were designed to get him reelected. They couldn't really wait to see whether or not he got reelected to go after him for the things he was doing to submarine or torpedo the campaign of a rival. That was Joe Biden on the Democratic side. So that was the reasoning. Nancy Pelosi, I'm sure, never thought they would bring over 20 Republicans. I think she hoped they would bring over some. I think she hoped there would be witnesses in the Senate. But the Republicans have stood almost in lockstep in support of the president.
And we, of course, had last night's State of the Union address. Let's listen to a comment from the president's address very early on in the evening when he laid out the points he would hit.
I am thrilled to report to you tonight that our economy is the best it has ever been. Our military is completely rebuilt, with its power being unmatched anywhere in the world, and it's not even close. Our borders are secure. Our families are flourishing. Our values are renewed. Our pride is restored. And for all of these reasons, I say to the people of our great country, and to the members of Congress, the state of our union is stronger than ever before.
The president laying out his economic record, of course, hyperbolic in many respects, but the partisan division, which is always on display at the State of the Union, where you know, half of the audience is clapping, the other half sitting on its hands, was even starker, I thought, last night, Ron. The president didn't acknowledge the outstretched hand of Nancy Pelosi, her looking very uncomfortable behind him during the course of the speech, and then with the theatrical flourish of tearing up the speech. It was a night of theater from the president and all the guests that he had. It was like reality TV show, and then her theatrical flourish. It was quite an intense show.
Yes, and everyone was quite conscious of being on television. And this has been a television show now for half a century. People have been watching the State of the Union on TV. Before that, it was just the president talking to Congress. Sometimes he sent up a written report. In the 19th century, it was routinely just a written report. But it has become one of the greatest opportunities for a president to use his matchless stage and his matchless access to television to entertain the country and to make his case, especially in a re-election year. And we've seen this in the re-election year of Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan. George H.W. Bush tried to, but of course was not successful in being re-elected, but they all used the State of the Union this way. Having said that, I have seen, since I came to Washington, 36 of these events, and never in the previous 35 have I seen anything like last night. It was so much more partisan on both sides. And that roar you heard just now when you played that clip of tape, that roar was coming from Republicans. Some of the Democrats were applauding, but they weren't roaring because they don't believe that the state of our union is stronger than ever before. They see the polarization between left and right. They see the partisan split between Republicans and Democrats. And they know that a lot of their own constituents are not feeling the benefits of that economy that the president is praising. And they know that for them, the state of our union has been stronger in the past and is not strong today.
Yeah, each side has its own numbers to bolster its case about the state of the economy and the state of the country. Ron, thank you so much. Appreciate your being with us to kick off our conversation today. And we'll look forward, of course, to this afternoon's live NPR coverage, 1 o'clock our time, of the Senate vote, the final step in the impeachment trial of President Trump. Thank you, Ron Helfing.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. NPR, Washington Desk, and senior editor. We're going to take a brief break. We'll continue our conversation. We've got a pair of political analysts who will share their thoughts about these three major political developments. We got the Iowa caucus results to talk about, and there we have Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, the ones who came out so well there. Tougher, it appears, for Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden also lagging well behind in Iowa. And we'll talk more about the competing messages, the Democratic response, and the State of the Union from the president, as well as this afternoon's vote. It's Air Talk on KPCC, back in just over a minute. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. We're talking politics with Democratic strategist Matt Rodriguez of Rodriguez Strategies, based here in Los Angeles, former senior advisor to President Obama's campaign 2008. And also joining us, making his debut, is Matt Fleming, not in life, but on Air Talk, GOP communication strategist, opinion columnist for the Southern California News Group, which of course includes the LA Daily News, Long Beach Press Telegram, many other publications. And he's former communications director for the California Republican Party. Matt and Matt, good to have you both with us. Matt Rodriguez, let me start with you. Your thoughts, first of all, what we saw in the State of the Union address last night and how Democrats responded to the president being very much the president.
I thought this was an absolute classic Trump and everything you need to know about Trump, which is he made the case, and he's got a good case. That's what's frustrating for Democrats. The economy is in a pretty good spot. There's a lot of macro indicators. Some of the numbers he cited were a little bit out there.
It was hyperbole.
It was slight hyperbole. But look, I mean, the bottom line is unemployment is at historic lows. There is some evidence that lower income wages are starting to move. There's been, you know, he's been very fortunate to be president at a time of continued growth coming still through from the crisis going all the way back to 2008 and 2009.
And like other presidents, he takes credit for stuff that started before he ever ended up in office.
You could debate, look, people have been debating this for 200 years of how much a president does or does not determine this. When Obama was, you know, every month they created jobs, he said it was enough to get him past Mitt Romney. It's, you know, you use what you use. Jimmy Carter, hey, you know, this is like bad luck, 1980. George H.W. Bush, bad luck, 1992. So look, Trump is using what, and he's laying out the argument that he should lay out. But then, of course, you know, he has no ability and no desire, because it's who he is, to show any kind of olive branch, which not, I don't mean necessarily relative to impeachment. I just mean in terms of the political atmospherics. He went right at Democrats. He didn't have to if he wants to get a sort of broader mix of voters, but he's made a determination that his personality is the way he is going to stick to, and that's what he did. So he went right at Democrats, and he went right at making his case. So it's both the promise and the also peril of him, because it does turn off some voters. I thought Pelosi handled it very poorly last night. I've been very complimentary of her. Democrats do not win. They need a countervailing argument and personality. And I think when she portrays that as a serious institutionalist, that matters. Ripping up the speech and all the faces last night, I'm just not sure. You're not going to out-Trump Trump on that front. And I'm not sure what she was hoping to achieve with that. She'll get a bunch of memes on Twitter. It'll make people feel good. And they can say she's his kryptonite and she's sticking it to him. But if you're on a broader stage to voters, I'm not so sure that those voters in the middle are going to particularly appreciate behaving like that.
And I wonder if, I mean, this may sound absurd, if her feelings were hurt when he didn't acknowledge her, because here she's making a gesture. He doesn't acknowledge her extended hand. And we think of politicians that everything's strategic, they don't have feelings. But most of our feelings would be hurt in a situation like
that. Well, and it's a natural human. Think of any time remember, you played a basketball game, you went to high five someone and they don't high five you, whether by accident or not. Little things like that actually matter. And on a national stage, for her to reach her hand out and him to just basically spin on his heel and turn around is classless. And I think discretion would have been the better part of valor there, which is
but it's
to
hard
let it go.
If you feel like
but it's difficult.
Totally,
he embarrassed her on purpose. Yeah. He did it on purpose.
Yeah.
No,
so I think her feelings, if that is in fact how she felt, are understandable.
Yes.
Speaking of, you know, poking Democrats in the eye, President Trump went right after sanctuary cities.
Tragically, there are many cities in America where radical politicians have chosen to provide sanctuary for these criminal, illegal aliens. In sanctuary cities, local officials order police to release dangerous criminal aliens to prey upon the public instead of handing them over to ICE to be safely removed.
And he continued in that vein. Matt Fleming, your thoughts on it being a very confrontational State of the Union address by President Trump?
Yeah, I mean, just to agree with what both of you were saying, I think that it was disrespectful of him to not offer a handshake. I think it's a common courtesy, whether he means it or not. And her theatrics during the speech were equally disrespectful. But I don't think that either side was considering how it played with people who didn't already agree with them. I mean, everything from the women dressed in white to Rush Limbaugh getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom to, you know, his speech, and everything just seemed like both sides were messaging to their respective bases, and it didn't feel like there was anything particularly persuasive to any undecideds out there.
Yeah, and the clip that we just played about the sanctuary city is a great example of the opposite worldview, because to Republicans, they hear that and they think, yeah, there have been these terrible incidents, and the president highlighted some particularly heinous crimes committed by people that were in the country illegally, and so they think of the sanctuary city as aiding and abetting that. And Democrats hear that and think, wait a minute, even under sanctuary policies, those who are violent criminals are turned over to ICE. This isn't about everybody gets a free pass just because they're in the country illegally. So that you have these worldviews in total clash, Matt.
Yeah, but even with the sanctuary city policy, it seems like that was done largely as a response to President Trump to begin with. It seems like, again, it's people messaging to their base and not really doing anything that provides good policy.
We'll continue our conversation with our guests, the two Matts, Matt Fleming and Matt Rodriguez. We'll talk a bit more about where the presidential race stands coming out of the completely disorganized Iowa caucuses. We still don't have the full precinct report in that race, but it appears the winners close to each other there are Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg. It's Air Talk on KPCC, back in 1 minute. It's Air Talk on 89.3, trending at number 2 on Twitter. Now, that's a reflection of the totality of American sentiment, is the hashtag Pelosi Rocks. So obviously, again, the Democratic base loving the response of tearing up the president's speech last night. Speaking of the Democratic response, listen to a clip from what was provided. This is the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer. She delivered this in front of a small audience and went back against the president's claims about health care.
Every Democrat running for president has a plan to expand health care for all Americans. Every one of them has supported the Affordable Care Act with coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. They may have different plans, but the goal is the same. President Trump, sadly, has a different plan. He's asking the courts to rip those life-saving protections away. It's pretty simple. Democrats are trying to make your health care better. Republicans in Washington are trying to take it away.
So here we have the starkly, there's the socialist takeover of medicine, yeah, as portrayed by President Trump, and Democrats saving health care by, at the very least, providing a public option a la Joe Biden to the government fully running the health insurance business. So, yeah. Matt, where does this leave most Americans here?
Well, we're not going to really know until there's a Democratic nominee. So what I think Governor was saying was actually probably a better place for Democrats to be. And healthcare has been a good message. I mean, people do forget Trump has lost a lot of seats while he's in office, similar to Obama. He's had bad off-year elections. He got crushed in 2018 by historic margins. He has some weaknesses going into the general election. But we are seeing where he's going to go in terms of the socialized medicine piece. I don't blame him. I would probably go to the same place if you were advising him. Any Republican would. This is not new. But some of this is going to depend. Is it going to be a Biden or a Buttigieg that comes out of this, which has more of a Medicare for all buy-in, which is more popular? Or if Sanders takes this thing, then it is going to open the party up to what are you doing for the health care of 180 million people. So Trump is clearly going to lead with that anyway. That will be a harder thing to do, and I think it'll be a more effective message for Democrats if they can say, we're trying to strengthen the Affordable Care Act, which has gotten more popular, and strengthen your insurance access to it. Because I think Republicans are vulnerable in health care. They've never been particularly great on that issue. But I think if it ends up being Bernie Sanders, we're in a whole different kind of realm in terms of how you message around health care.
And of course, Sanders supporters argue that they're going to make up in passion for, yeah, what may be the discomfort for some Americans with Sanders' message.
Well, that's the argument. And we're about to see that now play out in full force. Biden did very poorly in Iowa. We'll get to this. The Iowa debacle is a whole separate issue, which we can get to if we need to. But this is going to come down to an institutional candidate. And I don't know who that's going to be now. Maybe Biden. I don't know. versus somebody from the left, and it's increasingly looking like Bernie. And so now this has typically been the argument before, Bradley Gore and, you know, Hart versus Mondale. So this is not atypical, but this is where the argument's going to go. Yeah. And that's the Bernie Sanders argument, that I can win because I excite people.
Matt Fleming, so your thoughts on you know, this sort of framing of the healthcare debate.
Well, certainly from where I was sitting last cycle at the California Republican Party, I can tell you that healthcare was a massive vulnerability that we had. But I do think that voters want choices. I don't think that voters want the government in charge of their healthcare. I think that anybody that has any understanding of how the government operates probably doesn't want the government in charge of something like that. We can point to failures all across the board. Not to say the government never accomplishes anything, but as a broader point.
Well, it sort of trades on the hatred of private insurance companies, which a lot of Americans have. But there are other Americans who are pretty happy with the private insurance they've got.
Agreed. I think that a better message than single payer would be thinking of ways to give people more options, thinking of ways to reduce premiums, and giving people, you know, health care that if you know, protect pre-existing conditions and give people health care that can help their lives, as opposed to having some government-run behemoth.
Are Republicans comfortable with the way that President Trump frames socialism and goes after Democrats, claiming they're socialists?
I think it's proven to be a pretty effective message.
Socialism polls very poorly. I think it's right above right below atheism for
It's rising. It's rising.
But it's rising.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, I will say, I'm no socialist myself, but, you know, the horrors, if you want to call them, some of socialism. I mean, some people even go all the way back to like Franco and Mussolini. I mean, some of this is not as top of mind as folks. So, you know, the Cold War for a lot of folks on the communist side was a long time ago. I remember that stuff, and I remember the Reagan speeches, and I remember the wall coming down. I mean, that was right. You know, that was formative experiences for me. But, you know, you're talking about people, if you're born in like the mid, late 80s and the 90s, that stuff's, you know, that's kind of like what the Korean War or something was to me. That felt like a long time ago. And so there are some different perspectives on that. And where voters are going to go. And look, I have some concerns about Bernie, but I get where he's talking about. The parties are weakening. Trump's already had his takeover of it. The Democrats can't even run a caucus in Iowa. You have very weak institutional candidates. Biden's a very weak candidate for a front runner. And so his argument of like, we're in a new world and I'm going to push through because this is what Americans really want. We can argue that now. We'll have to see how it plays out. But it's not a wholly divorced from reality, with especially where the parties have been going over the last 15 or 20 years.
Well, and the other thing is that the concern had been about Sanders, that he's got his supporters and it's a finite group.
Yeah.
It does appear he's growing that group that he had originally, and that Sanders is gaining strength, and that it's not an isolated Iowa phenomenon.
His numbers against Trump are actually pretty good. He can make the case, and I don't think this is going to happen. He can make the case that I can go to some of these states and get some of these white working class voters. So, and he's going to raise an absolute ton of money. I mean, his people are enormously dedicated, far more dedicated than anyone else in the party. And so that's a real possibility. The one issue that he's got, no one's truly opened up on Sanders, a full-on fuselage. Hillary never wanted to do it because she didn't want to alienate his folks. She knew she was going to get the nomination. People have tiptoed around him here. That will not be the case with Trump. There will be $1 billion unloaded on Sanders and his record. So that remains to be seen how he would stand up to that.
Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. Appreciate your analysis. Matt Rodriguez, Democratic strategist of Rodriguez Strategies, LA. Matt Fleming, GOP communications strategist, former communications director for the state Republican Party, and opinion columnist for the Southern California News Group. Much more to come in our second hour. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Congressman Adam Schiff with us tomorrow.